Ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
Live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company here on a Monday. You heard it. Battle Born Broadcast Center. Adam Hill is here as the company. Busy week on the way as NBA Summer League is in town. As we'll be out there on Tuesday and Wednesday to cover all the basketball stories. A lot of NFL today. A little bit of legal stuff with Justin Watkins as we're hanging out in the Battle Born Broadcast Center. More college sports than anything else today. Because the other conferences are going to be doing their media days this week for football, and we've got all the conference realignment stuff back on the table. Dion stole the thunder last week, and Mountain West Conference media days were interesting because there were so many new coaches, Adam. It looks like we're going to have another coach. I didn't see if an interim has been named yet. This is unlike any league I've ever seen in the recent history of college football. I don't know, last 25 years. The Mountain West has lost another coach on the eve of the season. Jeff Tedford is going to step aside for the season at Fresno State, the number three pick in the conference. They have probably the best returning quarterback in the conference in Mikey Keene. They're loaded on offense. Defense is trying to get back to where it's been in the past, and now Jeff Tedford for this year is out.
Yeah, and weird, you know, timing, of course, any time this happens around this point in the season, just before fall practice kicks off. But in particular, he was just here. Like, he went through the entire – I'm not going to say the motion. I mean, he went through the grind of, you know, media day and all the, you know, kind of chaos and silliness that goes along with that, which is, it's great and it's a good time to be around. But something that I think if you had made up your mind that you weren't going to do it this year,
yeah,
you wouldn't have done that.
That's what
so
I was thinking.
This had to be a last minute thing.
Well, that's the interesting part. One, did you get to talk to him face to face? Were you in print scrums with him?
I walked by for about 2 minutes.
Okay. I didn't book him, and I was actually surprised. He was pretty glib on interviews, and I've heard he's a good interview, but the couple of times I've been around him, I'm like, eh, I don't think I want to put him on. I kind of make sure we pick and choose. Folks are going to be high energy, and it's not ripping on Tedford, especially as he's walking away for this year. I'm not trying to do that. I had heard that he was kind of iffy going into the offseason. Now, I don't know if it was health-related, if he knew about health stuff. I also think there's a lot of dissatisfaction. Now, I don't think he would walk away because of this, but there's been a lot of dissatisfaction by Tedford and for the staff on the lack of improvements and monies coming towards Fresno State football. And they've been told over and over again, there's been different dates that they were going to get money approved, fix the locker rooms, fix the stadium, and none of that happened. I know he said health, so I'm sure that's what it is. And he's already had one. He stepped down from the job a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Remember that? I'll tell you what's crazy is think about that one. I was going to tell the story last week. One of the worst interviews we had, and I just didn't vibe with the guy because we were kind of joking going into the interview. I don't even think you were on it, but there was kind of a theme of the day, and it had something to do with some hip-hop or rap angle, and it was with Kalen DeBoer, and he sat down, and I start out like kind of the theme of the day, mentioned some hip-hop thing, and he was like, yeah. I'm like, all right, guess you're not on, you're not gonna vibe on this one. And at that moment, I'm like, wow, this guy's he's going to be a real success at Fresno State. Now he's the Alabama coach. So I would say it had to be me.
Yeah.
He's a little dry, but it had to be me. So.
Or he's just so football. That's why he got that job, because he's so good that he's
that's
like,
what it was. He was so football. He was not. Like, and you know what? You know how it is. You get a rapport. I'm guessing. I don't know how Barry was, Odom, with everyone else. I don't know. I think Barry's probably more loose this time around at Mountain West Conference Media than he was last
time.
Well,
I'll say he – I was at his print scrum, which was close to an hour.
Oh, yeah?
And he had somebody that just kept asking about Doug Brumfield.
Oh, no.
And he kind of just kept playing it in stride. And then finally, like, the fourth time the guy asked about him, he was like, just so we're clear here, he's not with the program.
Oh, he was asking. I thought he was asking about his retirement.
No.
He didn't even know about that.
No, he's like, when you got a leader like Doug Brumfield back there, and he's like, well, you know, we got a couple guys.
Oh, wow.
He just kept... So, I mean, I think he's very adept at handling questions and participating in interviews. And finally, he kind of let the kid down lightly. And I told him later, I said, Barry, you should have just crushed that guy.
Nice.
Like, what are you doing? Unleash.
Yeah. So, yeah, back to the story. Tedford, he's a football guy. Very, very well regarded. All around football, is an offensive genius. So, I hope he's okay. But yeah. My guess is that Fresno,
it was also hot in Vegas.
I don't think it's like heat exhaustion. It zapped him for the season.
It's like I don't want to come back here again. I'm gonna play in this league if there's gonna be 115 degree weather around here.
I can't imagine that Fresno's completely blindsided by this. Players might be.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there was some. Maybe not. Maybe he got back and had a doctor's appointment and he was like, all right, this has to happen.
By the way, we have to check into this one, and I haven't read all the notes on this, and maybe someone has read it. 702-364-1100 is our Finley Kia text line. Blake Anderson put on leave. Nate Dreiling takes over at Utah State. A window opens this week, a 30-day window where any Utah State player who wants to can transfer. I'd imagine it would be the same thing with Tedford, right? That within like 5 days from now.
Well, didn't they announce that he's just taking a leave, not gone?
Is he gone for good?
I thought he was just taking a leave.
Right. Well, technically, Anderson's not gone yet. They have to go through the whole process.
Well, yeah.
There's not a He's yeah. He hasn't been fired yet. He's on leave, pending an appeal.
He's gone.
Right. But by the letter of the law, I wonder what the deal is. So we'll look into that over the next couple hours. And I don't think Fresno players would bail, but that doesn't mean that the Sharks at the higher level at Power 4 are like money, 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 money.
Somebody want Mikey Keene? Pretty good player.
I mean, could it happen?
Sure.
Scintilla of a shot, but if someone comes down the pike, we just heard Jay Norvell saying that his quarterback was offered $600,000 by someone at Kansas State. What do you think of that, by the way? He named Kansas State, Mississippi State, and I'm blanking on the other one, for coming after either Braden Fowler Nicolosi, the quarterback, or his best receiver.
Yeah, I mean, I think
you like guys outing other schools?
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to have the impact that he thinks it is. I mean, look, that's what you're supposed to do now. I mean, there's technically rules against actually getting guys that aren't in the portal, whatever, but everybody knows this is happening. I think what he wants to do is shame them. What it's going to do is tell everybody else, like, hey, these are the schools that are aggressive. They're going to pay. Like, they're playing ball. Let's go.
Or it also puts a target on Norvell's back. If CSU does anything close to that, then someone will snitch on them.
Sure, but again, I don't think that's the problem. I don't think snitching on them is the problem. It's the other way around. It's not being able to keep guys when that happens. And they did. They kept them, so that's good. But I think you want to be the ones offering people now.
Charity softball game over the weekend here in Vegas at LV Ballpark. Knights and Raiders, a bunch of celebrities alongside. Knights win, Knights win, Knights win.
Knights won.
Rules violation.
Well,
shaky run scoring.
No, I mean they won by enough that it didn't matter. There was some. It's funny because I was on the field obviously before the game, and I kind of joked with the umpires that were down there, and I said, "Hey, let's keep this thing fair, guys." And they're like, "We'll do our best."
No, I wish I was around. Like, no, he means it.
Yeah,
this is a must.
Yeah,
he's watching. Adam Hill. Ref overseer, official overseer is on the scene. You better get it right.
They were just like laughing, like, "Oh, we'll do our best." I'm like,
No.
This is if you're gonna be here, let's take this seriously.
Reputations at stake.
And then there was just a couple awful calls at first base. I was like, What are we doing? What is going on? And they're kind of laughing about it and like, this is awful. But no, it didn't have any impact on the result. The Knights rolled, had a couple big innings late and put up big numbers, but that's obviously not what it's about. They raised a ton of money, over $200,000 for charity, and just a way to kind of not only get together for those two teams and, you know, have their players kind of meet each other and, you know, socialize in this way before their season start, but also fans that just kind of, you know, get close. There's a lot of autographs, a lot of photos, a lot of interactions with the fans, and then, you know, obviously between the players on the field as well. So I think it's always cool to be able to be out there and see all that going on.
No injuries.
Nope.
And you got – I mean, the question we want answered. Come on now.
What?
Who are we concerned about the most?
Ricky White.
Okay. And? Oh, no. There's the long pause. Oh, no. He's making a face. It's that Adam Hill face where he's like, how do I say this?
Well, he had never played baseball before. We talked about that on the show with him. I talked to him on the field before the game.
He must have been okay. Come on.
He was nervous.
Oh my God!
Like nervous. He had apparently went in he had hit a couple balls on the UNLV baseball field with the UNLV baseball team.
Uh-huh.
They gave him a bat to bring, so he had his own bat.
Okay, that's nice.
Because some of the Raiders players were laughing, like, "Kid said he's never played before, but he's got his own bat." I was like, I think he just got it.
They're trying to do their best. That's across-the-board teamwork.
He went very safe swing.
Yeah.
Good for him. I think they taught him, like, hey, just
make contact.
Put your hands right at the ball. Go to the ball. And he did. And he made contact. And then what he was doing is putting the ball on the ground and running very, really fast,
yep.
which he can do. And it was smart. He was getting on base regularly.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
But he went way too hard after a fly ball.
What?
Way over his head.
Why is he in the outfield? We told him not to put him out there. You warned everyone. You're like, Nate Hobbs, fly ball to the face.
So here's the problem. When they play softball, they can't play with the regular wall, right? Because you're not playing 300 feet.
Sure.
So there's no warning track. So he was on a dead sprint trying to catch a ball that went about 50 feet over the fence, ran through the wall.
No.
Knocked the wall down. He tumbled like six times.
Oh, my God.
I didn't breathe for like 20 seconds.
Oh, my God.
And he got up.
No.
He didn't look great getting up.
Yeah.
I think he's fine.
Oh, God.
He was fine afterwards. But in my mind, I just said, this is exactly what nobody wanted to see.
Oh, my God.
This is what nobody wanted. He ran. The wall fell down.
Holy crap.
He ran right through the wall.
Dude, I have to check up on this because I only saw a highlight and I thought it was so stupid. I'm like, I can't bring this up. But you mentioned Ricky White and taking a small swing to put the ball in play. Yeah. Did you see Terrell Owens nearly hit a home run? I don't know if it was softball or baseball. Terrell Owens at 50 almost hit a home run at a Major League Baseball field. His swing was one of the worst I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how the hell he did
that.
That's
just all power. But he's also
at your waist across?
Yeah, but he's also just a tremendous athlete in that he people forget he played college basketball at a pretty high level and was very good.
That's incredible.
Obviously a very good football player, of course, but yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that he's able to play some baseball, but the fact that he has a bad swing, who knows? But his power is going to be there. Jose Canseco was just crushing balls off the scoreboard.
I figured that was going to be just a disaster, just bombs.
It had a runner.
Really?
He had a runner for him. So he would just step up to the plate, hit a home run, and then somebody ran for him.
Like, he's like, I'm going to hit so many home runs, I'm not really legging these out.
There was a young lady with him that would run for him when he would hit.
So he's being nice. He obviously could run.
No, I think he's done this every year.
Okay. Yeah, I'm saying he's not, like, debilitated now.
Well, I think if they told him he had to run, I don't know if he would have played.
Really?
He was there to hit home runs.
Right. But you think he's lost his fleetness of foot?
Well, I think if he would have hit like a ground ball, I don't think he's running it out.
I don't know. Who can run the 40 in under 7? Brian Daboll or Jose Canseco?
I might take Daboll.
Stop.
Muscles aren't fast.
I teased it last week. We have to get into Daboll because that was a big thing on Hard Knocks Giants. We're going to obviously see that episode 3 is tomorrow. That got a little crazy, and I think I was part of a work. I don't know if they were kidding. I don't know what was going on. But all right. Well, we're going to get into the video game because it is out. I can't believe Adam Hill is here.
Not quite yet.
Pretty crazy. You're not.
It's not out yet.
Okay. Tomorrow or tonight at midnight, no?
Well, certain people get to pre-order it.
Okay. So when will you get your hands on this game?
Well, I'm going out of town.
Oh, so you kind of fibbed about being holed up for a while.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you're going to enjoy
when I get it. When I actually get it, that's when it's going to start, probably.
We got Monster Jam 6 in town this weekend, sorry. Two tickets, Saturday, a couple of weeks, on the 27th. Two tickets, go see Gravedigger, Max D. They'll be in freestyle. And a racing competition. You get your tickets at UNLVtickets.com, UNLVtickets.com. Two tickets. Monster Jam is in town. The big trucks are here at the Thomas and Mack. Get hooked up by a Griffin. Caller 7, 364-1100.
Good Lord. Someone pour me up a double shot of whiskey. They know me.
It's Cofield and Company live.
There's a party downtown near Fish Street. Everybody at the bar.
Griffin actually bobbing his head to this. Shaboozy? Tipsy? Who was that originally done by? Oh, no. You don't realize it's a cover? Isn't it a cover?
Well, is it a... It's somewhat like T-Pain, but, I mean, it's not like a...
Wasn't there a Jaquan who did Tipsy?
Well, okay. But I don't think that's the same song.
You don't think so?
Maybe.
We're going to have to look up the lyrics. Vast Research Crew, which means Griffin.
I mean, it's so different.
Can you see if...
it's so different?
It is.
Yeah, yes. That I'm like, okay, I guess, but... Okay. Shaboozy is basically made by Beyonce. That's the story of Shaboozy, who's trying to rise up the ranks.
And oh, really?
Beyonce put him on Cowboy Carter, and then he took off.
So Beyonce's going back to the well with the country music, which was not received well by lots of people.
No, that's Cowboy Carter. It was number one on the Billboard charts and the country charts, and she featured him.
Okay.
And then he took off from there.
All right. Sounds like a good line dance that someone like a Griffin would do at, you know,
probably
one of the local country bars,
probably.
Maybe.
Could happen.
I was known in the past to go to country bars. Was not known to be doing line dancing to anything. I played this song.
I think this is bar. Doesn't you want to say club?
I played this song at my house for a 22-year-old female.
Okay.
Are you just going to let me go on?
Okay.
It was the daughter of a friend of ours who was over the house. And I had played it on the karaoke setup. Not that I was going to do it. But she went out of her gourd. So, I don't know.
Okay.
Kids these days. So, I don't know about you, and this is not hip-hop, but back in my day, and especially your day, Missy Elliott, Busta Rhymes.
Sure.
You know they were here this weekend.
I know. There's a long discussion about going. I think it was the same time as the softball game.
It was.
Yeah.
Also, Ciara.
Was Russ here?
I don't know.
Okay.
Surprise guest, Timbaland.
Okay, that's good. You went?
I was offered.
Oh. Who would say no to that?
With the SO. I had some cleaning to do at home.
Okay, well, that sounds terrible.
What do you mean? What? There's some stuff to do. I also went out and hung out with one of our friends at one of our local bars. So,
okay.
You know. But the SO came home and raved about it, said it was awesome.
Oh, I'm sure it was great.
Never stopped the all the sets. I was going to say all the pyrotechnics, no, but said the production for the show was freaking awesome. So that's good. I thought Missy Elliott and Busta Rhymes were like super old, but I guess they're still pretty good.
Well, I don't think they're
there's a lot of big crowd. She said big crowd, about probably 15,000 plus at T-Mobile.
I wouldn't necessarily call them like. Relevant.
No, but that's my point, is that they could still, if they're still doing 15,000, you could get in.
People, yeah,
I think later, she got in for like $115 downstairs.
Later in life, I guess they would be, you know, you're still kind of holding on to that. Like, that would be, I was like, yeah, that's cool. That's something I listened to when I was young. That would be cool to go listen to that again.
She,
but it's not something people are listening to now.
Raved about Ciara. Said she was awesome.
She puts on a great show. I've seen her a couple times.
I didn't know that. Okay, good.
Yeah.
But she didn't go. Softball.
Softball. Work called.
Okay. Were you prepping for soccer the next day?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
By the way, the crowd at T-Mobile, all cool. The crowd in Miami for soccer, not so much. What was that? When I read the building has been breached, I'm like, what is going on?
It was wild. I also was pretty fascinated by the ways that it was covered on television.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know about the entire time because I was going back and forth, but watching in Spanish, as I usually do for soccer, it was like full court coverage of what was going on outside the stadium. People trying to get in, people trying to, for those that didn't see, like a gate fell at the ticket, you know, where you scan your tickets. And then a bunch of people rushed in that didn't have tickets. And then people that did have tickets couldn't get in because there's too many people inside already. So then the other people were left outside. Then people started trying to sneak in, climb over everything they could. They're using branches to like get over the fences. They found some vents that they could crawl in from the outside into the stadium to try to get in. It was chaos. And trust me, I understand. If I paid that much money for tickets and couldn't get in, I'd be finding a way in. It was a wild scene. But they were doing a full court coverage of the – of the chaos on the channel that was showing it in Spanish. I flip back over to Fox, their studio show, and they were in the studio because the game got delayed an hour and 22 minutes. They were in the studio kind of breaking down the game. And I said, the story's outside. The story, we've already broken down the game enough. The story's outside. Now, again, maybe they were doing a lot of that, and I just happened to flip over at the wrong times. But for the most part, yeah, it was weird.
So you were anti-stick to sports?
When have I ever been stick to sports ever about anything?
You're of that age.
Sure. Yeah.
You're getting out there.
Yeah. But I thought the entire story, and by the way, social media obviously was doing a pretty good job. Now, there is a problem getting, quote-unquote, news from social media, as we learned this week. But once again, for the 8 millionth time. But
I read the guy who runs Twitter saying it was the only spot for news.
Yeah, it was not. it was terrible.
And is that why he made the sarcastic remark?
Every
about
time,
it? My place is the only place. The legacy media stunk.
Every time there's a big. And by the way, it's obviously
you can do it.
It's a thing. I left after a couple hours of coverage on Saturday, thinking, man, how responsible and awesome was media today at actually doing their job right, getting all the facts, getting everything together, making sure everything was in order before putting things out there. And then I go on social media like, media sucks. They're like, oh, my God.
This is where we are
The
now.
Lack of understanding of what – it's just baffling.
Yep.
And it's those kind of times where you're like, yes, media is awesome and great. But, yeah, it was bizarre. But, yeah, social media had a lot of really, really good videos and stuff that was, like, showing you what was going on at the stadium. Some of it was a little bit, a little misleading to what was actually happening. But a lot of it was just good. Hey, here's a video. Here's a picture. Here's what's going on. Here's what I'm seeing. It's good for cases like that.
On the way back, let's hear about the victories on the pitch for both Argentina and Spain.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Copa Euros, what was a better game out?
Euros, for sure. Copa was, I mean, there was some drama, obviously, with a very late goal. But, I would say the Euro game was much, much better. And I do think part of what was going on before the game in Miami impacted the game. Players left the pitch where they were warming up to try to make sure their families were safe, then came back and then tried to rewarm up an hour and a half later, then play a match, and it was sloppy. It wasn't great. I just thought there was far more action throughout in the Euros. Obviously, there was more goals in the Euros, and then there was late drama in both in terms of goals scored to win very late in the match. So, I think the Euros was clearly a pretty much a better game.
Which game actually means something moving forward?
Well, neither. I mean, in the end, I mean, you get titles, I guess. But what is it? It doesn't.
Well, didn't mean anything for England. Did it mean anything for England to make the final?
I guess not if they didn't win. They've been making finals. Does it help you in the next tournament to have won? No, not necessarily. We'll see what England does in terms of does another run to the finals like solidify Southgate, or does it get people saying, "Hey, you can't win the big one," and they're still hate him and want him out as they have. So. That'll be interesting to find out, I suppose. But to me, they did a pretty good job figuring out a way. Like, they didn't play well. They were behind in every match. It seemed like every single time they played, they were just playing to not lose. Then they'd fall behind, and then they'd go all out aggressive trying to score. They would score, and then they would go back to playing not to lose again. And it was bizarre. And is that the manager? Is that the players? Is that them? The players openly talked about how nervous they were and how much pressure was on them. So that could just be that, or it could be his strategy. I don't know. But again, that was effective. Now they had a pretty easy path, but they did make it to the final yet again. So that was good. Obviously, Spain, with a ton of young talent, wins again most European titles, and now obviously will be a favorite going forward with some of the young players they have on that roster that played exceptionally well in this tournament. So that's big for them. Argentina kind of seems like they're – especially Messi, probably his last game with Argentina. They've still got enough talent, but I think their dominant reign as number one team in the world might be over soon, but they took advantage of it by getting yet another title at the end of it, so good for them in that regard. And then Colombia, I thought, played incredibly well as well. I think an interesting story coming out is James again, player of the tournament, unbelievable run with Colombia, doesn't really seem to care when it's club time, only cares when it's for the country. So what does this do for his career? I don't know.
Planet Nissan presents the ESPN Las Vegas Summer of Fun. It is back. We're halfway through 8 trips in 8 weeks. This week's trip is a 7-night cruise to Mexico, stops in Ensenada, Cabo, and Mazatlan, plus some spending cash. And all you got to do to be in the running for this trip is text in. Code word of the day, 702-364-1100, 702-364-1100. The code word today is games. Games. Text it in, 702-364-1100.
Steve Kim, the host of the 3 Knockdown Rule, joins Cofield and Company, presented by Snack Nutrition.
Rolling on here to Monday, Cofield and Company. You heard it. Adam Hill is here. Lots of good stuff on the show, including more on EA college football, more on receiver. I do not like what I'm seeing on receiver, so we'll get into that. One last thing on soccer this weekend, Copa America, Argentina, Colombia, Miami. The stadium's been breached. People going into the stadium, and they're like, that's my seat. Sorry. Okay.
Well, a lot of them were outside the stadium. Couldn't get in.
Not even getting in.
They were interviewing them live on the broadcast, and like they're holding up their, you know, their phones with their tickets on them. Like, I have a ticket. They won't let me in. And one of the guys said, it was in Spanish, so rough translation, but he was saying, I told the security I have a ticket, and he said, that's not my problem.
Really?
Which I fully believe.
What do you mean, that the security guard said or the ticket person said?
Of course. Security. Not my problem.
Yeah, I know. Do you want to go off on this for 5 minutes?
Every stadium in the country? Except Thomas and Mac. They're wonderful. They're great. Allegiant. They're awesome.
You said some reaction to what was happening in Miami. Some people were saying the U.S. is a third world country.
Yeah, it was a big talking point yesterday across a lot of social media, across a lot of the Spanish language broadcasts, and there was also obviously passing of the buck of who's responsible. You know, it was a CONMEBOL event, as I know, because as we've talked about, I wasn't credentialed in the game. Nobody from right. really local media was credentialed for the local games here, because you had to go through South America, and you were getting responses in Spanish, and it was like, okay, we got to try to translate this and figure it out, and it was a difficult process. But yeah, they were saying, CONCACAF had nothing to do with this. This is a CONMEBOL event. So they were kind of passing the buck back and forth yesterday, but clearly CONMEBOL was in charge.
Let's bring in Steve Kim on this one. Boxing expert, fight expert, really an expert on everything. Confucius is in. What's up, Steve?
What's going on, fellas? Hope you had a good weekend.
We did have a good weekend. I wasn't getting trampled or losing my seat at a soccer game. What'd you make of what happened at Copa America in Miami?
It was more exciting than most soccer games, I'll say that much. But, you know, it was mostly peaceful fan interaction, though. Let's just be careful how we frame that. But I thought it was interesting. Those fans are very passionate. And as I saw those Colombian fans going through vents to get into the game, I was thinking, you know what? I hope one day I am as passionate about something as these fine people are about soccer. In a way, I kind of admire that their excitement for what has to be one of the boringest sports in the history of mankind.
When's the last time Hurricanes fans were trying to do that at Hard Rock Stadium?
Uh-oh.
You know, it was probably 2017, the Notre Dame game, when they came in as, I think, the number 3. I was actually at that game, and I have an idea, and I tweeted it yesterday. I think what Miami needs to do is to schedule day-night doubleheaders with Miami football, especially for like the middle of the road ACC teams and Columbia soccer. I think immediately the attendance problems would be solved for the Miami Hurricane Athletic Department.
Twitter, you can find him at SteveKim323. All right, well, let's bring in the Canes and let's talk about some college football rumors and realignment rumors. I think the Big 12 is trying to get ahead of the SEC or the Big 10 and having rumors sent out about maybe Clemson and Florida State going to the Big 12. You're a Miami fan. Would you be interested in Miami riding those coattails to the Big 12 and leaving the ACC with the other two schools?
You know, as someone who does not just want two major conferences, I actually like the conference setup that we had. It gave every conference across the country had a certain type of personality. There are traditions that were upheld. I miss it. I really do. As someone who lives out on the West Coast, I'm still a little bit numb that there's no such thing as a Pac-10 or 12 anymore. it's actually very surreal in a lot of ways. You know, and as for a Miami fan, I think a lot of Miami fans are kind of split between, do we like the SEC and those great games in the Southeast, or do we want to be with the Big Ten, which also is a monster? But, you know, guys, I saw some of the tweets with all the graphics of what would be like a 16 or 18 league in the Big 12. It's not bad if Clemson and Florida State were attached to it, but I'm hearing other reports that neither of those schools is really fully on board with that program. But, guys, I'm just telling you, I do not want just basically the NFC and the AFC in college football. I would like to have other conferences have a say in the matter, that have their own leagues, have their own personalities and own rivalries. But, again, I kind of know the direction of what this is. This is all about what basically ESPN and Fox want.
Right. Well, I think the only thing that's going to save us is the idea that came out actually from someone in the Mountain West Conference, which is a Big 80. A main division of football, and then there'd be a division two. But the Big 80 would feature 80 teams with a relegation potentially in and out of that last division of 10. And then it would be set up, I think, regionally, where you'd have more regional matches. So Miami would be somewhere in the top 70 in a division that would feature, you know, more regional matches.
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, it's funny with the Miami schedule this year, guys. Their first five games are actually in the state of Florida. And then the funny thing is they go out on the road to Northern California. They play Cal Berkeley in what is now an ACC game. Now, by the way, that's not Miami's first time coming out there. They played them way back in 1990 in Dennis Erickson's second year. So, look, there is no geographic logical common sense anymore in this. I mean, when there used to be a time when you thought of the Southwest Conference, you thought about Texas in that area. When you thought about the Big Ten, you kind of thought about the Midwest, right? Nowadays, it just really doesn't matter. I don't think it makes any sense, but this is all about television markets and media markets. But I think the first thing that Miami needs to do is actually have a really good season and become a program again that is taken seriously, because quite frankly, they've had an off two decades. I've always felt as long as Miami was a respectable school competing for something beyond just 7-5, they're going to have a place and a home. I'll be honest with you, from an individual perspective as a fan, what conference they end up with is not necessarily my first priority or the thing that I think of.
It's funny you mentioned that Cal game. Cal and Stanford are the ones that I think of first. They're just hilarious that they would join the ACC and then all the ACC teams would leave and they'd be stuck with just like Cal, Stanford, and a shell of the ACC.
You know what's ironic about it? Cal and Stanford were two of those schools that had presidents that thumbed their nose at the realignment of what was going on. They completely misread the college football landscape. And the Pac-12, again, and a lot of this blame has to go to Larry Scott, they had university presidents who did not realize sports matters, that it is a business. And a college and a university, first and foremost, is a business. And it was their own arrogance that led to the demise of that fine conference. And then they were scrambling to, guess what, attach themselves to a super conference for their own survival. The irony is dripping.
Steve Kim is with us on Cofield & Company. It's brought to you by Snack Nutrition. Big 12 was here last week for their media day. Dion and company took over one of the days. I don't know if you're watching the Giants Hard Knocks offseason, where they feature a bunch of interviews with prospects. And I got to tell you, I didn't think last week was a great week for Shedeur Sanders. These NFL personnel people are careful on everything, and I think they overanalyze everything. I don't know that all this talk about where Deion's going to let his kids go, and then Shedeur, and most recently Travis Hunter, throwing other players on the team under the bus. I don't think they're handling this right in terms of getting them ready for the NFL.
When you look at that process, and Steve, I am watching Hard Knocks. I've literally watched every episode and every version of Hard Knocks they've done since 2001, which was the debut with the Ravens way back when. It's fascinating. I'm learning things. But you're right. The way they grade and judge quarterbacks and the way they scrutinize them with the fine, with almost like a fine-tooth comb. Yeah, and look, this is the other factor. I think this is the first time in a long time that Coach Prime will not be coaching Shedeur. How is he going to take real coaching when you're basically expendable? Quarterbacks nowadays, guys, and there's such a change. Number one, first-round draft choice quarterbacks, they don't get that redshirt year the way Steve McNair and many other players did. They basically are thrown in. They get 4 to 5 years to prove if they're worth another contract. If not, they become very, very disposable. And I don't think Shedeur Sanders is this surefire top 10 pick. I look at his game. He's a little bit slight. He holds on to the ball a lot. There are certain throws in the intermediate areas I actually think that he does struggle with, especially the deep out. I've noticed that. And, like, Travis Hunter, to me, is much more of a guarantee to be a top 10 pick because of his versatility and his dynamic playmaking ability. But you're right. Coachability and locker room issues, I think, whether we're allowed to say it or not, are going to be scrutinized with Shedeur Sanders.
Are we sure Deion won't be coaching him?
Well, okay, so I have a question. If it's a package deal, I think most teams will say pass.
Me too, but somebody might say yes.
Okay, well, shame on them, but it's their team. They can do whatever they want, but Coach Prime, it would be nice if he could put together a winning and a bowl season at a P4. It's one thing to dominate the SWAC at Jackson State when you have far better rosters than everybody else. That much has been proven. So what we know about Deion at the highest levels of college football, last year in the Pac-12, they went on, what, a 7-game losing streak, or they lost 7 out of 8. And, guys, I've been studying this. The Big 12 is actually not a bad conference. I kind of like that conference. I think that the first 8 or 9 teams are actually very solid, some really stable programs, and some teams like Kansas and Kansas State, I think, have big possibilities this year, and Utah gets their quarterback back. I want to see if Colorado can make a bowl game before I start anointing Deion Sanders as an NFL head coaching candidate.
So Monday, that means Steve Kim is in hour number one. Let's talk a little boxing. We always like to talk about guys who are doing well with the business of boxing. Listen, you get $14,000 in for a fight in this era. That's healthy business. So tell the audience here in Vegas about the future here. And I know he's already established, but, you know, we're always looking for those big-ticket items. Tell us about the future of Boots Ennis.
Oh, I love Boots. I was probably one of the first media members to really talk about him about 7 years ago. He was originally found and signed by Cameron Duncan, who just passed away this year. God rest his soul. And he told me back then, he said, Steve, I think I signed the greatest natural talent I've ever had. And this is a guy that signed Donaire, Kelly Pavlik, and Bud Crawford. And I said, hold on. I said, better than Terrence Crawford? He said, yes, because he's naturally bigger. And I think the prophecy is looking pretty good. And this is a young man who's very likable, exciting style, is almost the antithesis of Shakur Stevenson in a lot of ways, both in demeanor in and out of the ring and preferred fighting philosophy inside the ring. And he had not fought in the state of Philadelphia where he is from, or the city, since 2018. And he did 14,000 against what I would say is a rather nondescript opponent. And he signed with Matchroom Sports and Eddie Hearn. Guys, I think that should be a yearly occurrence at the very least to build that city, which has a great fighting boxing tradition. And it's great news. And I would buy stock in Boots Ennis. I think he's a fantastic fighter.
Well, not to build on that with a sad note, but you mentioned, you know, passing in the world of boxing. Shocking for a lot of people. I didn't know about the health status of Shannon Doherty, but I saw you tweeting a little bit about it. She passed away over the weekend, age 53. She of 90210 fame. And I did see a comment someone made about when Brenda wasn't part of the show, everything changed. You agree with that?
Wasn't the same. Wasn't the same. That was me. I remember they had the breakup with Dylan and Kelly. It was an ultimate betrayal. And, yeah, I watched 90210 for all of you out there rolling your eyes. Deal with it. It was a great show. And it was. And I know the fan base hated her, and I read reports that the other cast members, they had issues because she was a little bit delicate. But I don't think the show ever had the same dynamic when she left. And I know that she kind of returned. And I'll make a bold statement right now, guys. The 90210 summer, that season they did in like 2000 or 2001 or 1990 or 91, I thought it was revolutionary TV, guys, because back then all of the shows used to go on reruns during the summer, and here they came out with new episodes for about a month and a half, and I will say it, I watched them religiously, guys. I have no shame in admitting that.
I was more of an Our House guy and then a Charmed guy, more than not trying to do it.
Yeah, Charmed, you never got into more sex appeal. Yeah. Charmed was easy on the eyes. There's no doubt about that.
Sure.
But You know, it was a great show. Look, the 90210 go on a couple of seasons too long? It did. I don't think there's any doubt it dragged on at the end. But I would say from 1990 when it premiered, I think it was that October, to about 94, 95, it was Camelot, fellas. They don't make TV like that anymore. They really don't.
Okay. All right. Steve Kim is with us. Let's close on this one. You know, we know Jerry West passed away a little while ago. I don't know if you saw the visual, the photo of Jerry West. He's not at Summer League, but a little shrine to him with a court line baseline seat with some placards and stuff for Jerry West. And I wonder how many Lakers fans, after this offseason, the way it's gone so far, and last offseason, if they're really starting to think more and more about the way the Lakers and Genie treated Jerry West and moving him out of the organization, and look at where they are now.
They heard about this when he left the franchise, and when Dr. Jerry Buss, the greatest owner in American sports history, was still alive, he said to Jerry West, for as long as to the Lakers, good seats. You know who took them away? Genie Freda Buss. And I just find that to be inexcusable. Jerry West should have never left the Laker organization. It never should have happened. Hold on, fellas. Steve Kim, I'm on the drive-on list. And so I've said it pretty often with Jason Whitlock, guys. I don't think the Lakers are any longer one of the premier franchises. I really have a question about the leadership and the direction of that franchise. And, guys, it's pretty clear. Bronny James is not NBA caliber. I know it's just Summer League, but if you can't score consistently in Summer League, you're not going to be able to do it during the real season.
Can I go back to you calling Genie Freda? Is that a Fredo reference to
Yes,
Godfather?
It is. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes,
so
it is.
I think
go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say, you're one of the only people I've heard, and I think I'm correct on this, defend Jimmy with some nice words.
Hold on. I didn't say Jimmy was Sonny Corleone either now. There were issues.
Okay.
I'm going to draw another television parallel here, and at least this one is in this decade. I'm beginning to think that Jerry Buss was just a much hornier, cooler version of Logan Roy of Succession, and all of those kids are just they're just slappies. None of them are good. They're none of them are really should have been capable or been given that leadership spot. I'll be honest with you. The fact of the matter is the NBA is now owned by a lot of corporations with billions upon billions. The Lakers are basically a mom-and-pop shop. They really are, and that's what I've been told. They're a family business. So that's why they need LeBron James to leverage television deals, even though I don't think for the long term it's good for the overall brand or the future of the Lakers. Yeah. And they don't have the resources of a Steve Ballmer. So I kind of wonder, are the Lakers ever going to be what they were again in this current climate and the current leadership?
Steve, we're up against it. Have a great week, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.